Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:30, and joining me on the phone for our normal Tuesday discussion, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. I'm Mike Dilber. Good morning, Paul.
Hey there, Mike.
I tell you what, lots of things to talk about, and let's talk about the impacts of the Israeli-Iran conflict. This thing was, Iran just had to get into it, didn't they?
Yeah, as if there's not enough going on internationally right now. I think the main area of interest is if this situation spirals out of control, what we could see in terms of oil prices and possibly other economic issues. So far, no real big impact on the oil prices. And I think part of this is the fact that we, as a country, are much closer to energy independence due to the fracking boom, due to New Mexico's production and other issues. You and I are both old enough to remember the days when if there was something bad on the horizon in the Middle East, that you could expect oil prices and prices at the pump to shoot up quite quickly. And it would have a very dramatic impact, including on the entire U.S. economy. Those days are thankfully done. But obviously, if this situation does spiral out of control to the point where you get a hot war between Israel and Iran that goes on kind of on an ongoing basis, that could be something that's very problematic for the U.S. economy, for oil and gas production across the Middle East, et cetera. So it's a interesting and important development that has suddenly cropped up. And I'm also interested to watch to see if there's, progress on these aid packages. Congress has been talking about aid to Ukraine and aid to Israel for some time. Obviously, immigration got into that mix for a while. Speaker Johnson is working through some plans, but certainly from a political perspective, it would be interesting to see if you did a standalone bill relating to just Israel aid, if the attack gave the Democrats a little bit more of a pause before they voted no on that, considering what we just saw. So a lot of moving pieces, some of them economic. Obviously, there'd be another big spending bill if, in fact, this is done. This money goes to Ukraine or Israel. So that's obviously another component of all this and why a lot of Republicans are concerned about further aid to Ukraine. So it's a lot of pieces moving around on that table.
No, absolutely. And Schumer says you can't do support for Israel without doing support for Ukraine and supporting immigration spending. So, you can't do anything unless you do all three of them. We can't do one or the other. Yes, we can, and Schumer refuses to.
Yeah, well, Schumer does have a lot to say about it, so we'll see how that all works out. I mean, obviously, I think it's safe to say you have the ability in Congress to do whatever you can get away with and get, preferably in an election year, support of a majority or a significant number of the American people.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's move on to the next one, and this one's going to be fun. Biden LNG export ban losses across the spectrum.
Yeah, related, but a different issue. And we've talked about the boom in crude oil from New Mexico and from the United States. Well, part of what happens with that is that you just also see a massive boom in natural gas production there are also formations in the east, in states like Pennsylvania and West Virginia, where you have a massive uptick in natural gas production. So what has happened is that a country, the United States, that had at one time been planning to import massive amounts of natural gas as part of our so-called energy transition, has now been able to retrofit export facilities and ship our natural gas to countries around the world, including Western Europe and Asian countries. The Prime Minister of Japan was in Washington, D.C. last week, and he is very interested, very supportive of more natural gas being exported because his country, like a lot of Asian countries, including China, don't really have a lot of the natural resources like oil and gas that we are lucky enough to have. And the same is for Western Europe, although it's more of a political issue for a lot of Western European countries. They're just so dominated by the radical environmental groups that they do not do fracking in most of Western Europe. So that puts them at risk of being held hostage in terms of their economies and their energy resources by Russia, which we've seen to an extent in the Russia-Ukraine war. It also makes them fund the war through the Russian side by essentially buying the number one thing that Russia has to sell, which, of course, is natural gas and, to an extent, oil. So with all that being said, you would think the Biden administration would be engaged in a massive push to increase natural gas production and exports so that we can help our allies out. Also wean some of these countries, including Asian countries, away from dirty coal and to natural gas, which is much cleaner and also produced in the United States, generating tax revenues and jobs for Americans. Well, the natural gas LNG had been a real success story for the United States, one that we've commented on and supported and talked about since the early days of the Obama administration. But Joe Biden, being even more to the left and more beholden to the environmental groups, who misguidedly, I believe, opposed this kind of effort with natural gas, they convinced Biden to put a moratorium on exports or permit exports, so that he's essentially clamping down on the ability of these exporters to build new facilities and bring new exports online to these countries. It's mind-blowing. You know, I always say that, you know, at least one good thing has to come out of every public policy, but LNG exports at least have three good things about them from a foreign policy, from an economy, and from an environmental perspective. And yet here Joe Biden is slowing down or stopping this industry from growing. It's truly mind-blowing. And of course, and I've got an opinion piece that's going to be running in newspapers across the state. And I note that you know, Tom Udall, back when this issue was kind of taking off, with the Obama administration was dealing with LNG exports, kind of just getting the ball rolling, that even Tom Udall, who he's a Democrat, he's a very well-known environmentalist, he was among the leading advocates pushing for the Obama administration to move quickly on LNG exports, asking them to cut the permitting time and approve the project as they move forward. And here we are with Biden way further to the left, way more restrictive, unfortunately, than even Obama and Tom Udall. So it's and where are Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan? Of course, they're nowhere to be found. So it just shows you, again, how far to the left the Democratic Party is these days, especially, you know, our U.S. senators, but also the president.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, in the next item, well, there's their left mouthpiece. The former NPR executive recently said there's a bias at NPR. No.
Yeah, I know. This is not exactly news, but it is a bit of news for an insider at an organization like National Public Radio to come out publicly and admit and point fingers and point details at how the bias is within a group like National Public Radio. Of course, there is a government funding component to National Public Radio from the federal level, but also from the state and local level. I went through for this post a handful of NPR stations that we have here in Albuquerque and up in Santa Fe, and you have one station that's housed at University of New Mexico. You've got one that is owned by Albuquerque Public Schools, of all things. You have another one that is housed at Santa Fe Community College, so another government institution there. And ultimately, the bias at NPR has been longstanding and well-known, but it has gotten worse in the sense that 10, 12 years ago, I would get invited to be on panel discussions, and it might be two or three liberals against me and the host, also sympathetic to the liberals. Now, they just don't contact us. They do not engage with different voices from across the political spectrum. At one time, I even had a producer from the NPR station at UNM. It's called KUNM, and he would do commentaries. We would record commentaries about relevant issues of the day, and he would put them on the air and just give different voices, not just Rio Grande Foundation, but conservative, center, and left, an opportunity to, kind of share unfiltered their ideas about what was going on at the time. And that gentleman, no longer, he was actually not fired, but let go because a new person who had more of a DEI, more points on the DEI scale, was able to push him out the door. And so it's been a long time since I've seen NPR stations around New Mexico willing to engage, even the way they have in the past with an outnumbered panel, for example, on the issues that the Rio Grande Foundation cares about. So this rings true, this national story, and it's something that, at the very least, I think NPR and PBS should not be funded by the federal government. But, that's the way things go these days. We have the left that constantly receives money from the taxpayers and is able to do their political dirty work with those dollars. It's not an even playing field out there.
Well, if anybody needs to toe the line in the middle and just present the news, that is NPR, considering it is taxpayer dollars, and Democrats aren't the only one that pay tax revenues in, so do conservatives. And when you think about it, NPR got to be its worst when the Republican president, and we had a Republican president, Donald Trump, and had a Republican Senate, Republican House. These guys were out of control.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's move on. New Mexico is the only state in the U.S. to see a drop in immigrant numbers. Seriously?
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, they put together a report that showed that New Mexico was the only U.S. state over the last decade to see a drop in the number of immigrants living in the state. Now, there's a few caveats here because, first and foremost, that's very surprising and unusual. Not that there's been a drop in New Mexico per se, but just there's so many headlines about immigration issues. Now, it is worth noting that the Census Bureau probably gets a lot more legal immigrants, and this doesn't distinguish between the two, that you get a lot more willingness to participate in a Census Bureau survey or answer questions from somebody from the Census Bureau from a legal immigrant than you would from a illegal immigrant who doesn't want to highlight that they are here and illegally in the country. So there's, that factor is obviously part of the equation. But yeah, it's kind of a shocker that one state, New Mexico, was the only state to see a drop. Now, you know, New Mexico has a slightly higher than average percentage of immigrants living within its borders. Of course, we're a border state, but you look at the states where you see the highest percentage gains, and, you know, the Californias, the Texases, Floridas, but New Jersey, Massachusetts, Ohio, a lot of states. So, you know, New Mexico, and there was a professor from New Mexico State who explained it this way, Christopher Erickson. He is an economics professor at New Mexico State, said the primary motivation for foreigners to immigrate is to find a good paying job. Mexico is a low income state with relatively slow job growth, makes it less appealing for foreigners. And of course that's legal and illegal. Now, you know, obviously the illegal population has a lot of different factors in terms of where they would live because they're trying to stay below the radar screen and, you know, having jobs that are off the books or family that they can stay with and not have to worry about trying to find or illegally obtain documentation. All those things are real challenges. But legal immigrants have all the rights that Americans have. They can go where they want to go and find the jobs that are best fitted to them and their skills and pay the best. And I think that is a indictment in many ways of New Mexico's economy. And it's really highlighted by the fact that, you know, we've talked about this influx of illegal immigrants in places along the border like Texas, and that they've been shipping them to blue cities, you know, Chicago, Boston, San Francisco, and other major liberal cities, sanctuary cities. New Mexico, you know, and you, right here in Albuquerque, for all of its liberal politics, you don't see large numbers of illegal immigrants out roving around. I would say you still see lots and lots of homeless people, and you can't always tell the difference, but you generally, the illegal immigrants are going to have a lot more motion about them and activity, whereas the homeless are kind of just camping and sleeping out in public spaces by themselves. And again, you drive down the streets in Albuquerque and you see lots and lots of homeless, but very few signs of illegal immigrants and their activities. So I think a lot of data points that we've talked about highlight that really New Mexico's just not an attractive enough place from a job and economic standpoint for immigrants in large numbers to come to. And that situation has obviously evolved over the last decade. So it's a really, Mike, I never thought I would be talking about the economy of New Mexico and the immigration situation as an economic indicator of New Mexico's poor policies coming out of Santa Fe. But here we are, multiple stories we've talked about recent months on that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And continue with that issue. New Mexico is a mediocre 38th in rich states, poor states.
Yeah, this is a this is the 16th version of this report, annual report put out by what's called the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a group of legislators across the country from probably every state, I think. And they work on model legislation. ALEC, as it's called, got a lot of attention about 5 or 6 years ago because a lot of progressives and liberals did not care for their work. But basically, they're just a group of conservative legislators, mostly Republicans, some Democrats. There are conservative Democrats in some states, not so much in New Mexico, but they have professional staff that analyze the economy, analyze state policies, and the rich states, poor states is, I think, the most comprehensive and detailed report looking at all the 50 states and their economies and how they not only will have performed, but how they will perform in the future. New Mexico ranked 38th in both the performance, so the backward looking, and also 38th in the economic outlook index that Alec put together for this rich states, poor states. And it's unfortunate because we have the oil and gas boom. We could be doing tax reform. We could be improving our economic standing, but we're not. We've talked about that. The states that perform better, well, let's see, they're the states around New Mexico all perform better. Utah is the top performing state. Arizona is the third best. Colorado is 17th best. Texas is sixth. Oklahoma is ninth. And there we are at 38th. So I would encourage folks to go to Rich States, Poor States. I believe it's .com. Check .org if that doesn't work. And really go through this report. It is a phenomenal report that I think does, like I said, a great job of going through a lot of different variables. And it's richstatespoorstates.org. You can find where New Mexico stands and where other states are. 50th, by the way, worst state, New York. Vermont, number two at 49th. California is at 47th. So some of the traditional, you know, big blue liberal progressive states are at the bottom, but it's a very solid report, and one that's New Mexico 38th is not as bad as we could be, but it's not particularly great either.
Well, when you look at places like California and New York and different places like that, I think the only thing that's important to them is to be able to count these people to get congressional seats, even if they got to pay them to keep them in poverty, but give them enough just to eat and stuff. If they can count them on the census and gain more congressional seats in the U.S. Capitol, that's what they're happy about.
Yep, that is absolutely true.
There you go. Well, okay, let's go to this next one. This is interesting. Security firm fires their Albuquerque client?
Yeah.
A security firm fires their client? I mean, isn't that kind of backwards?
You would think, but amazingly enough, a property owner who, for full disclosure, happens to be the Rio Grande Foundation landlord, Doug Peterson with Peterson Properties, a very large real estate firm in Albuquerque in the metro area. And he sat down with Channel 7, KOAT, to talk about the $200,000 he spends at a property in the Central Mercado at Central and Pedro, San Pedro, here in Albuquerque, kind of in the war zone area, what's now been relabeled the International District. And, you know, Peterson told KOAT the people are using fentanyl, they're trespassing, they're panhandling, damaging the property, defecating, urinating, all the stuff that you kind of come to expect. And the security firm called VetSec Protection Agency told us that the property had become too dangerous even for the group of ex-military and law enforcement officers,
wow,
who almost all of which are armed.
Wow.
But they said it just isn't worth it to deal with the situation. So I think that may be the most disturbing article I've seen yet about Albuquerque's security situation and the way this city is managed, and how soft on crime our political leadership is, including Tim Keller. We talked last week about, you know, how the police force is only being held accountable in one direction, that is the DOJ, still under a consent decree. But when the police chief gets, you know, crossways and runs a red light, hits somebody and injures them seriously because of another shooting that he flees from, there's no accountability for that. So it's disturbing. It's something that while we have a presidential and legislative election this November, our mayor is not up for election until the following November, but there needs to be obviously change in the city of Albuquerque, and the accountability of the police force and its management and its ability and willingness to you know, take on this criminal element. Otherwise, things are just going to continue to get worse and worse. And it's already to the point where a military and law enforcement background private security firm told their clients, sorry, we're not taking you anymore. That's pretty pathetic.
Wow. Wow. I tell you what, that's something else. That's just wow. Yeah, that's all I can say about that. So let's get into the next one, because this one I like. Because you and I have talked about this one before. We talked about return on investments. This is no good on return on investments. New York Times, film subsidies are money losers.
Yeah. The New York Times is not known for being a particularly objective source of information. They, like NPR, tend to lean to the left, and they are an entity that we often find ourselves, to the extent that they look at New Mexico, but, you know, just watching from afar, we tend to see the way New York Times reports on things and not particularly agree with their perspective. But the New York Times recently did a story in which they looked at mostly Georgia and Louisiana. Those happen to be red states. So this isn't exclusively a blue state phenomenon, right. But the film subsidies have kind of infected a lot of different states. And they have 38 states, in fact, according to the Times. But right up at the very top of the article, they say the problem is the film programs are actually huge money losers for states. Studies show that these efforts typically return a quarter or even a dime on every dollar given to the studios. That's exactly what they found in New Mexico when they've done objective analyses, not funded by the film industry or film supporters. That is on par with our own findings, and kudos to the New York Times for doing a very objective analysis of the fraught nature of Hollywood subsidies. This isn't going to move the needle here in New Mexico. This is not something that we are going to change until or unless we have a big shift in the legislature and its kind of broader approach to economic issues. So, for the foreseeable future, New Mexico is going to continue, along with these other states, to subsidize Hollywood and get pennies on the dollar back from Hollywood. So, it's even the New York Times is now saying, hey, these film subsidies are not a good idea. So we'll see. Maybe somebody in the not-too-distant future will actually wake up and do what needs to be done in New Mexico, which is lower taxes for all of us, eliminating corporate welfare, et cetera, like the film subsidies. But I'm not going to hold my breath, because at the very least, we need a new governor, and that's not going to happen for, you know, 2.5-3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You go back 20-30 years ago. I'll go back that far. I remember in Kansas, they shot Paper Moon in a little town of Rush Center, Kansas, and the filming company paid Kansas and the Rush County people to shoot that movie there. Now we've gone from them paying to utilize our neighborhoods and our streets and our cities to us paying them to come in and use, and then it costs us anywhere from 75 cents to 90 cents on the dollar, because when we put a dollar in and we lose 90 cents, that's not good return on investment.
No doubt. And, you know, New Mexico's had some films in the in what I guess you would call the old days that were not done with the film subsidy program. I mean, they have to film somewhere. And, you know, obviously California remains a big location for all the Hollywood studios, but sometimes you want to get outside of where California has, you know, in terms of their landscapes, et cetera. But they come to New Mexico, and they did to film Milagro Beanfield War. They filmed Red Dawn before the film subsidies got going. And as somebody who works in downtown Albuquerque, where they're constantly filming, it's a serious inconvenience at times, shutting down roads, limiting movements around downtown. It's, it should be the other way around. They should be paying us for the inconvenience of filming in our city.
Well, that pretty much ended when states started saying, hey, we want some of that film, so we'll pay you to come. And then all of a sudden, everybody's got to pay them, and they don't pay nothing. So it's not a good thing. It's kind of like, never mind, I'll just move on. So, but that's how I feel about it. Let's see. Okay. Oh, yeah. Taxpayer-funded Southern New Mexico abortion clinic location still to be determined. They just don't get it. We don't want it down here.
Yeah, this is from Source New Mexico, which is a liberal media outlet. At least they're funded through a nonprofit. But the headline from this April 10th article, a year later, Southern New Mexico still waiting on location for what they euphemistically call state reproductive health clinic. This is, of course, a $10 million capital outlay that was passed in the last legislative session. And you know, the article goes on for quite some time discussing why this abortion clinic has not been built yet or started yet. They haven't even determined a location. And, you know, aside from the specific issue and why we're doing this with taxpayer dollars, and obviously our concerns about that, we have talked ad nauseum about the capital outlay process and the kind of poorly conceived approach that we use in this state for capital outlay. And of course, given the amount of construction going on, given the amount of you know, workers and the price tag associated with construction, they're probably sitting there thinking to themselves, well, we may not have enough money with this $10 million to find, you know, the facility that we want or to build the facility we want. So just another issue with the capital outlay process. But, of course, this one's particularly meaningful and problematic. It's something that taxpayer dollars should never be used for.
Absolutely.
Abortion. Simple as that. And especially since part of the goal of this entire facility is to actually encourage Texans to come across the border to have their abortions in New Mexico. It really is a huge problem morally and from a kind of state use of resources perspective. So we'll just see how long it takes them to come to a decision and actually spend the money, and whether they have enough money, because construction prices ain't getting any cheaper.
That's right.
They, you know, they're going to probably sit on this money for a while, and that's going to require another capital outlay expenditure at some future date.
Absolutely. Well, I will say this about the left. They have done good in coining two phrases. Number one, a bad person with a gun kills somebody. It's gun violence. That's the first phrase they coined, gun violence. It's not a person. It's not a person committing the violence. It's the gun. And the second one is abortion is health care. Something dies, but it's health care.
Exactly.
There you go. Well, Paul, another good conversation. We look forward to the one next week. And what's your plans for the rest of the week? You got big plans coming up?
Oh, well, my daughter is on my her school's golf team, and I am the coach.
So, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole different, you know, we got the Masters up there in Georgia, but, you know, we've got 6th, 7th, and 8th graders playing golf. That's a whole different ball of wax, let me just tell you. So,
wow.
We had our first tournament of the season on Saturday, and we'll have another tournament on this coming Saturday. Got practice tonight, and you know, it's fun. You know, I learned to play golf at a relatively young age when I was a golf caddy and kind of taught myself. So I'm trying to spur the love of the game in my daughter and some other kids at school, and it's fun. They really seem to enjoy it. So
all
great
right.
sport, and of course, enjoyed the Masters this past weekend, and watching that beautiful location, amazing golf, and just a, you know, it's especially when you're talking about Augusta, the way the Masters goes, no cell phones allowed in the place. It's a very traditional, environment, and they really have a lot of respect for each other in the game. And it's unfortunately, you have to call it a throwback at this point in time, but it's the way things should be in many respects.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, enjoy coaching that young one. And I coached my daughter in softball. Good and bad, but it was an enjoyable time. So I'm sure you're having the same good time. Paul, we'll look forward to talking to you next Tuesday.
All right. Take care, Mike.
You too, buddy. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Be sure to check out the Tipping Point New Mexico on Thursday night.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.